When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You come to a piece of art with all of your baggage and all of your history and your very soul, and you open yourself up to it and you take that in, and it hits you only the way it's going to hit you.
With these fictional characters we're surrounding ourselves with, it just gives us more opportunity to meet good people and bad people.
These characters that you're thinking, oh, this inspires me, I want to be like this, I want to take some of the philosophy and move on, this is just as close to you. These characters are just as close to you as your family that want the absolute best for you.
Welcome, welcome everyone to a Toot Around podcast episode. My name is Richard.
My name is Austin.
Today we got two very special guests on to talk about, are fictional role models healthy? We're welcoming on John with Talking Story and Jacob, his son. We thought this would be a great opportunity, you know, a father-son dynamic to talk about role models in fiction. Thank you guys for coming on.
Oh, absolutely. I just need a business card that says John's son. I feel like Everyone will know me better that way.
Well, I just, you know, we could just turn the mic over to you for the full, however long this episode goes, about what a role model your father's been. And go.
I don't think anyone wants that. You specifically probably do not want that.
Yeah, it's probably some things I don't want to hear.
Well, I do want to get a little personal later. We'll see. We'll see how personal we get.
I want to hear this. I want to get personal too.
And so go check out their YouTube channel, Talking Story. After this conversation, you're going to want to go right to them. They are my favorite booktubers. And for those who don't know, Jacob, we basically employ him. He does our thumbnails. He's our thumbnail guy right here.
If you noticed, man, yeah. Their thumbnails have gotten a lot better.
So good, yeah.
Somehow, that's why. Jacob.
Thank you, Jacob. John.
No problem.
John, you're making up for it by having the Democracy is Cringe shirt. I love it. Let's go. That's amazing.
Talk about role models, people that come up with catchphrases like this. I don't think I have to say anything else.
Good. I don't think I'm the first one, but I am glad to perpetuate the overall crumbling of the institution or the faith people have in democracy as a whole, of like treating it holier as thou. No.
I did notice you didn't choose teeter my totter. I think that was intentional, but yes. I'll allow it. I'll allow it.
You know, there's sometimes wisdom hits so close, so deep. I don't want to cheapen it by just wearing a t-shirt. I actually got a pillow stitched of that one, though, Austin.
You touched me, John. Thank you. Thank you.
Odd pillow to have. Do you two, like, look at the sales of Teeter My Totter and Democracy is Cringe and yell at each other?
Yes.
It's a close race right now. It's very close.
We have exact numbers.
Yeah. John, you buying that t-shirt might have just put us at 50-50. So I don't know.
It's
close. I'm doing all I can, man.
So guys, Rich, with your introduction, we have a father and son duo here on BookTube. They have the book knowledge, and they also have some insight to this whole topic of, are fictional role models healthy? And Rich, where did this idea spawn from us? Why do we even come up with this and want to talk about it with them? Do you remember?
I think it's just we're thinking about how people look up to characters in books. Yeah. And I'm just wondering, did that bring any conflict for parents? Does a father or a mother look at the fictional hero their child is now looking up to and go, uh-oh? Right. Does that ever happen? You're like, uh-oh, that's the wrong role model. It is there a sense of, like, hey, should the role model be real? Should your role model be your parent? And does the parent look at that going like, they should be looking up to me, not Aragorn? I don't know. Just a thought came up, and just, you know, I haven't had children myself, so I'm wondering, John, has that ever happened?
Is that in the works, Richard? Because,
you know, there's always something going on in the background. It could happen.
I'm a busy guy. I mean, you know, I think it would, that's a lot of questions in one. I always had role models that were, I've been in pop culture and love pop culture like all my life. And that's been like a pretty good stretch here. So I don't think I would have a problem, but it's like, it depends on who they picked, right? Like if he were to say, yeah, I love this Darth Vader guy. I'm really in on his, he really speaks to me. Then you know, I might have some worry there, or, you know, I can think of others, but I don't think so. I think it's natural. I mean, I think the next tattoo I'm getting is, you know, a bondsmith, because I dig Dalinar so much. So I totally get it, man. I'm totally all in. It's like, if we're talking about fictional role models, let's just talk about Dalinar for the next however long.
John, that was my first example note, was Dalinar : We are on the same page.
I mean, how can you not?
That is the number one role model, Dalinar :
Caveat, if you've read that, he's a complicated man. I want people to watching that have read the books. We understand he's a complicated man. There's things in there.
For sure.
But I don't want to spoil things. It's fine.
No, not at all. No spoilers. No, but I'm talking, if you got up to Oathbringer, which is where I've gotten, like, I haven't done Rhythm of War yet. That's coming in November, so I'm primed for, you know, to listen to a couple of my favorite booktubers be panelists.
Oh,
and Dragon Island. I know. Congrats on that.
You know, I've got to be prepared and ready. But I've got up to Oathbringer, and it's like, oh my God. By Oathbringer, my mind was completely blown. Like, it was like the journey this guy's taken, and he still keeps trying to reevaluate and reinvent himself and be a better person and a better father and a better leader, even after all he's been through. And suffered the slings and arrows of the depression that brought on, what he'd been through. So, I mean, that journey really spoke to me. I think that's a great example of a figure in pop culture literature or fictional literature that was like, man, I could get a lot out of that. I could definitely glom onto that philosophy.
Oh, yeah. One of my favorite characters in fiction, favorite books. And I know John then versus you, Jacob, where Jacob, since you say you're less read, I think you still read plenty. I mean, you're pretty much where I was 2 days ago. Okay, you're gonna catch up.
That can't be true.
trust me, it could be. But Jacob, with you and because I don't want to, you haven't read Stormlight, right? You haven't read the.
I have not. Yeah, no.
So from your perspective here, when we ask, are fantasy role models healthy? Do you have role models that come into mind, like with John, that he like instantly has one down? Or do you have one that's top of your mind, or do you go, you know what, I can't relate to that question as much. My dad's just perfect.
I wouldn't say my dad is perfect, but
it's a really high bar.
Yeah. No, I don't have one that comes specifically to mind. And maybe it sounds kind of cliche, but I mean, my dad really is a huge inspiration for me. I mean, he started his own theater company with my mom, and that's kind of how they raised me around story and the importance of it. And my dad doesn't suck with finances, so that's a pretty big plus. I can follow him in those steps, but I don't think that I have. I mean, I was a film major and watched a lot of artsy movies that are really dark and terrifying. So if I had father figures looking up to those movies, it would be pretty horrific. I think I'd be a pretty bad person. But
this is actually a great point where maybe book readers who find, I'm not going to finish the thought here, I promise, there's more to this, but book readers who find fictional role models in books don't have good parents. I'm just saying, maybe there's a theme here to
are your parents watching?
that's why I don't want to stop it. That's why I don't want to stop it. I have amazing parents. Love you both. But maybe there's a thing too, when we have a role model in fiction, there could be more of a likelihood of, you know, some people like to read to escape. And that doesn't mean that can't be equally just a hobby where you have a really fun time with. But some people maybe need a fictional role model. Like it should be prescribed one, because this conversation as well, Rich, we came up with this when we were also talking a little bit about self-help, where when people read self-help books, just nonfiction of, hey, how to live a life, Rich and I have the opinion, I mean, a lot of fiction is just showing you is some sort of self-help.
It's a self-help book with more, you know, extra steps.
Yeah, and development. Rich, what do you have to say about that in general? Do you think there's a difference between a self-help? Like, there is a difference, but what is the thing that makes a self-help versus a fantasy book that you could look up to somebody?
Well, I mean, the big difference is a self-help book generally will give a prescription of, like, this is the way you should do it. This is the right thing. This is the wrong thing. A fiction novel will often have a character that is deeply flawed and sometimes have a message of, hey, this is the right thing, but will often blur the line to let you think about it yourself.
Yeah. So
that's, I guess, the difference.
But we're not very read in self-help books in general, right? So
no,
would you two have anything that, have you read self-help books versus fiction? Do you think that there's a big difference between it? No, you haven't, John?
I don't know about you. No, I don't think you have either. Have you, son? Like, I've never read a self-help book. Never have I even picked one up.
I've been told to read self-help books, like, for school, and I didn't.
By all my friends.
Yeah. It's like...
I was given a book in college that was How to Be a Good College Student. I didn't read it, so maybe that says something. But, I mean, Rich, you're right. I mean, Darrow doesn't necessarily come with a thesis statement on his flaws. He just is flawed. So that's probably the biggest difference, I would say.
In some ways, I think it can make a more effective learning experiences when you – well, the best way to learn something is to actually do it rather than just someone being told something and you go, okay, yes, that's not a really great way to memorize something. It's better if – you're told something, then you put into practice. So a story is a sort of way you can put a lesson into practice, because you're experiencing the story like sometimes you feel like you are experiencing it. And so vicariously, you're putting that theory to practice. I think that maybe is a better way to hold on to a lesson.
Yeah, absolutely.
I completely agree with that. Like the way I was taught is like story – drama is a heightened sense of conflict, a heightened reality lived at an accelerated pace. So it's just a shortcut to empathy, right? I mean, we're all going to walk through all these different characters' shoes. We're going to learn maybe a little bit of something about ourselves that's reflected if we see a little bit of our past in that. Or we're going to possibly put ourselves in situations we've never been in and hope that we can, you know, do as well as some of these characters are, or do better than some of these characters are. So it's so important to take in story. It's such a human need and necessary for us. And it's a great way to understand not only those characters and different lives and bring them into your own life, but actually be able to touch the artist and what they're trying to get across to you oftentimes comes through the literature as well.
John, I'm curious, how much did you gatekeep for your own son here when he was growing up, when he was a kid? How much?
Oh, my God, we didn't gatekeep at all. Nothing. How old was he? Like, this was horrible. We were horrible parents. Like, I remember his mother. How old were you? Like, 7 or something? And I came home and she's like, I'm showing him how Spielberg can hold tension in Jaws. And it's like, the kid is 7.
I was 7.
Yeah.
Maybe 6. I had nightmares until I was maybe 14, by the way.
Yeah.
Then he was convinced. I think I saw the movie 7 when I was 7, horrific. I saw Ring when I was 9. Like, anything that I was somewhat interested in, they would go, yeah, let's watch it.
Wow.
Figure out the repercussions yourself.
That's not. We would stop it and show you what was going on and how the.
When the shark is eating the person, you slow it down frame by frame.
Look at the tension here.
Watch it in close detail.
You see what he meant?
How much blood they're showing here?
You see what he meant when he said his eyes rolled back like doll's eyes? Let me roll it back again. Look at it again. You see it right there? Yeah, we would do that over and over. So. But he got terrified because SeaWorld was miles up the street after his mom did that to him at 6. Oh. It's like, oh, yeah, yeah, they're only miles up the street. Sharks, wow. Tons of them, loads of them.
you know, they can travel on the rain.
Yeah. Oh, that I would totally believe that when I was seven. Yeah, that my dad did the same thing gatekeeping-wise. There was only one film and franchise he didn't let me see. Anything else he would up to the age of whatever was Saw. The Saw movies.
That's kind of fair.
That's a good dad. That's a good dad.
I still haven't seen them because he put the fear of God in me when I was like 10 and said, hey, see, we had all this these Blu-rays on just like the shelf behind us. It was all Blu-rays.
All movies, yeah.
He thought that was the next big thing. He didn't know that digital would take over back in 2007.
Hey, it's making a comeback.
Yeah, I don't know. So with all the Blu-rays.
I respect him because he invests in physical media rather than this fake digital media that they could take away at any time.
He has them all. He has them all, and they were all stacked there, and he would always say, hey, you could pick any film up here. Look at all these. He had hundreds and hundreds. He collected them like we collect books, and he said, except for these right here, and he would just build this up to, like, these movies are so unwatchable, and I didn't know how to work a Blu-ray, so it's not like I could just put it in when he wasn't watching either. So it was just, to this day, I will not watch those films. That's the one thing. So, John, it looks like you... Did you have anything that was your Saw version for Jacob that you said, nah, don't touch that?
You know, he kind of kept his own rules.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a while, like even when you were watching Jaws real early, I think mom would fast forward some parts or things like, yeah.
Mm.
But I mean, then there would be times where like I had a friend over for a sleepover and there was no fast forwarding. I saw everything, but... I don't know that there was anything that you specifically held back. If there was something I really wanted to watch, you would prefer to watch it with me.
Yeah.
Mm. More the mentality of, hey, he's going to watch it in some way or another better than I can explain it than not.
And another issue, too, with, I guess, just raising a child. And, Jacob, we're speaking, like, you're our same age, Jacob. I don't mean to make you sound like a child.
Yeah, I know.
Like, Jacob, if my dad was here, I'd be asking the same questions. Yeah. So, and Rich's dad is in the other room. He's recovering from a surgery. So,
Oh, really?
Yeah. Good, nothing bad. Yeah.
Minor.
He's healthy. Yeah.
Of the surgeries, it's, like, the minorest of minor surgeries.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, best wishes to him, for sure.
Yeah.
Now, I had a point there. Well, oh, yes. So, like, asking your dad those questions is when someone goes seeks out a fictional role model or a role model in real life, there's the in-between, which I think can be one of the worst, potentially. And that's the mix of fiction and reality, social media. So, when talking about that and how, I mean, I don't really have to elaborate from there with John
Probably
Jacob
or
in the conversation we will.
I think that's kind of what a podcast is for, elaboration.
I won't. You guys will. I'll leave the floor and just be this social media aspect. How about you elaborate, Rich? What do you think about the socials?
I don't like them. I'm not a fan of them.
We're on all of them.
I know.
even though we're all on a podcast at the moment.
A long time, like one of our earliest videos, we had a whole thing of like, hey, if you got to this point in the video, comment, delete YouTube. Because we just went on a rant of how much YouTube is not good for you. Yeah. And I still see those comments this day through our comment feed of just the occasional delete YouTube. I'm like, yeah.
Good. I mean, especially now that there's YouTube Shorts,
it's bad horrible. For you. And yet we have one going up. What? How often?
Every day or two. Yeah.
We participate, and it does make me sick sometimes. But I'm hoping that people use it a moderate amount, so that they like it.
Every time we post
doom
a notification,
scrolling. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
That's
every time
the
we
worst
post a notification to Twitter that we have a new video, I have to like click the post button like this. Like a.
This is one of those things where, and I bet if your dad would come down, Richard, I bet he would exactly this. Like, there's a lot that goes on in a kid's life you don't know, right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, he and his friends would, you know, go into the room after school or spend the night, they're spending the night or whatever. And it's like, it's different from when we were a kid. We would throw a movie on or catch some movie or something. It's like they were watching YouTubers, like from a very early age, like that was a big part of their entertainment lexicon was YouTubers, you know? And I didn't get it. I didn't understand it. It's like, What? And they wanted to be YouTubers. And I was like, this is the death of the town square. No one talks to anyone anymore. There's no face-to-face. Don't you understand? We're dogs and cats living together. This is just crumbling civilization. And, you know, then fast forward to he's like, you know, I'm going to start a channel for you, Dad. And it's like... We're all apart.
To be fair, you do have a town square for your Patreon. Like, you have a town square type thing. So you're solving the problem. And hey, Talking Story and us at Patreons, we do a book club. They have a participating community where you can do town square submit videos to them. So go check out theirs, ours, everything in between. And of course, you guys don't have merch yet, do you?
No, they do.
We saw you guys roll yours out with the slow motion walk at the gym, and it's like, okay, we're not ready.
We really did. That's not a joke. You put out that video, and we looked at each other like, how do we top that?
We're not ready.
That's so nice.
That honestly, though, that video did give us the actual bump in merch. I think like that was the right move.
That was it was just fun too.
You gotta make it fun. If it's just like, if it's always just straight give me money, not good. You gotta say give me money. Well, here's some funny. Give me money. That's
here's some funny for your money.
Exactly. That's the way the transaction works. There's got to be some kind of equivalent exchange.
That's a good life motto. I like that. I like that a lot. but with you, Jacob, and I mean being our age too, just all of us here can unite against John. I guess we grew up in this different era where Jacob, for you, and social media usage, I mean, we're all very aware that you can have very bad role models and you can get. But you can look visually and you people look better than you and you want to look a certain way, or people act more greedily, like buy this, buy that, and things are very showy and flashy on social media. Not just BookTube seems to be a safer portion of all the things on the internet. So I don't mean to degrade us too much. We do suck, but we suck like we're in the top 50% of stuff. You know, it's not like we're not bottom grade, but if you're just scrolling it elsewhere, it can be, I guess for our generation, you see a lot more mental health more of an issue and just a lot of things because people are comparing themselves to other people. So in a way, when we're bringing up this conversation with social media, are people looking at them as role models or more as peers of, my peers are doing this? Is it extended peer pressure in a way? What do you both think about that?
I really think it's changed. I don't know how old you guys are. Like you said, I assume we're around the same age. Like, we grew up with YouTube watching the early days YouTube, and now it's a much smaller list of YouTubers that haven't been canceled yet. Like, the role models are dwindling.
Right.
There's not a lot left. And like, to be able to look up to those people and want to make videos when I was a kid and now be making videos in a community like BookTube that is entirely different from any other community I've seen on YouTube, because it's so kind and respectful. It's like all the role models should be here. Like, this is what, if social media was like what BookTube is, I would support it, but it's not. So I don't.
I like that.
Yeah, I found the same thing. Like, I honestly, for years, I would ask the kid, I would rail against social media. Like, I truly thought it was one of the harbingers of our doom as a society. Mm-hmm. And you know, doing this because I wanted to meet people that love books like I love books, and it's like everyone I have met almost to a person is like phenomenal. Like, it's just the most amazing community. So I've kind of been turned around on what it can be, but I have no disillusions of how it can be misused as well, you know.
Like, basically every single technology, it's a tool.
Sure.
It can be used for ill and it can be used for good. I think a big part of social media, that the good can be an aspect of connecting you to other people and to actually get a community. The good side of that is you get a community of good, like-minded, or not even like-minded people, but you get a community of people that will ultimately make you a better person as well. Like, you become better. You become a better person. Or what the saying is, something of, you become the average of the five people you spend the most time with. So the people you surround yourself with will be somewhat how you surround, how good you will become. But yeah, the opposite is also true of if you're kind of, if maybe you're going through a rough spot, you're having, you know, the edgy, depressing, or whatever kind of a negative, if you have a negative personality or going through some phase, and then you get into a community that kind of just amplifies that and just keeps it going. And instead, where if you had a negative personality trait without social media, you have people around your life that will actually go like, hey, look, that's not good behavior. Don't do that. And you're alone, that you're alone in that negative behavior, or at least very few. And so it helps to kick that behavior out of you. But if you have, if there's a community for everyone, there's a community yeah. for sociopaths. There's a community for dog beaters. There's a community for whatever. There's a community for every negative.
These communities, Richard?
Yeah, Richard, how did that come up?
That was pretty niche, actually. That was strange.
But no, I remember that of it's, you go, I mean, that's commonly talked about with like places like 4chan is like the, you know, the sewage pass of the internet, of just the communities you're probably going to find. Like, I'm sure there's exceptions even in 4chan, but often it just kind of amplifies negative personality traits and behavior.
In a way, then...
Same thing with Reddit, though. So I don't see them too much different.
In a way, then, do you all see that at this point Rich is making about the people you surround yourself with online, social media? Do you think that the books you surround yourself with can do the same? Because it's strange with books, it's kind of more clear cut who the hero, who the villain is. You have your gray characters in other series, of course. I mean,
there's a lot of gray characters,
a lot of gray characters
nowadays.
But if we're talking about role models, do you think that there's any the books you read and consume around you, how much it affects our personalities and how much we try to emulate characters like John Jacob? You can even go into movies if you guys want as well with these kind of stories we consume. Do you think that the chicken comes before the egg here, where is it you tend to read the stuff that you'd gravitate towards? Or, like, let's say I have a whimsical personality, I read Discworld. Or can the books around you more change you and change your perceptions a bit? Which is it?
You want to go?
Sure. I mean, I kind of do both.
Yeah.
I mean, as far as, like, specifically gravitating toward things, like, there's this movie I really love that I don't love as much now because I realize it's not as good of a movie as I thought it was when I was a kid. It's an Edgar Wright movie called The World's End, which is like not his best, but the main character is this person that's in their 40s that peaked in high school and is very depressed and tries to get all his friends back together just for one more night to hang out. And I gravitated toward that a lot when I was younger because I was like moving away from my friends to North Carolina, and it was made sense to me to think about that kind of thing. But I can get to the end of that movie and see, oh, this is a horrible role model. Like, to suck people into your life like that and then treat them as things that are there for you is horrible. But things that I more go into to try and make myself a better person tend to end up that way rather than seeking things out just because I gravitate toward them, just for me. I don't know if you feel the same way, Dad.
That's a really interesting question. I was talking to Dr. Chase a little bit ago about his trilogy that he's written, and he was like, I think there's a lot of me in all of these characters except for this guy, you know. This guy, you know, there's none of me in him because, you know. And it's like, hey, I got to take the other side of that. I think even if we take some of our darkest villains and we're able to look at ourselves in the mirror and say, you know what? My darkest moments, I can have some thoughts, you know? I think there's no way for us to self-realize who we are and to try and overcome these thoughts until we can admit to ourselves, I am a human. And maybe this is even all the way down to my genetic code of being drawing lines between what I perceive as us and them. And if I don't start realizing I'm prone to do that, I can never transcend that. So I think there's no character that you can't possibly, even on the dark side, trying to pull something through if your self-realization levels are high in that way.
Well, so, can we talk about an example there that we've all read and that won't even be spoiler-esque? It's very bare bones with Red Rising Book 1, Jackal, sure. The character. And Jacob, you've read Red Rising, correct? Yeah. So, so with Jackal, not spoiling the book for anybody watching, Jackal's just villain, does bad thing, like does sociopath.
It's in the name. It's in the name.
You, the Jackal.
The Jackal,
the
right?
Not the good guy.
No.
So John, with a character like him, a villain, and maybe if somebody wants to relate in a other way too, you could talk about your. Is it Anton from No Country for Old Men?
You identify with Anton. That's a moment of self-reflection. And
but yeah, that's a moment of maybe you should lock yourself in a dark room and stay there for a while.
Yeah. For the safety of all of us, you should maybe. Yeah.
There should not be a community of Antons. No.
Probably not. No. But John, to that point, even the darkest psychopath that is there, what can we grab out of that? Not looking at them as role models, but seeing how what can not just learn, but you're talking about seeing how you could see something, a little part, because doubt. Just your point there. What would you say to those extreme examples?
Yeah, I mean, those extreme examples, you have to look at where they came from, their past, what built them into this, where do these motivations come from? What line of suffering are they acting out because of? I mean, evil really never just pops up, right? It's created. And I do believe it's in all of us. We all have, I think that's the magic of humanity, right? We all get to make that choice. We all get to make that choice on a daily basis. And the magic of it is most of us, most of the time, make a pretty good choice. You know, I mean, I found in my life, it's been a little bit longer than the other three of us here. So, I mean, it never ceases to amaze me sometimes. It's like, wow, this, you know, a light goes red and we all just stop, you know, like none of us just really have to be somewhere and screw the rest of us. I mean, we all make a pretty good choice all the time. So people like that, I mean, there are reasons why there are people that are so outside of the societal norms that, you know, we would perceive them as, to the rest of us, evil. But I mean, I think if you always dig deeper or look a little deeper, there's always a journey that they've gone that you can find some, you know, at the best of us, we can find some kind of empathy. Sometimes you just can't. Sometimes you just can't understand. But
it's, I mean, you can learn a pretty great skincare routine from Patrick Bateman.
To good morning,
got a good thing. Yeah, that's important.
But it's a very important lesson for every human to realize that we are all like to think of ourselves as good, and that is a fundamental part of us. Like, we are good people, and therefore we do good things.
Yeah.
It's important to realize that as we judge others from today or even through history, that we are very close. It wouldn't take much for us to be as evil as people in past times. Like, we are victims of our own circumstance as well. And to realize that, to give the extreme example of, if you were in Nazi Germany, more than likely you would be a member of the Nazi Party. Just who you, because that's how you grew up. Like, you are not that different from that person.
The people that are actually are special, right? Because you're abolitionist in America. Like, those are the outliers until it became the norm, right?
Yeah, just like back in history of, if you had money, if you would probably not be against slavery if you were born, you know, 600 years ago. Let's go even further back than general abolition of slavery. But that's important to accept and know that you're not that different from someone who does evil things, even in the history past. You need to accept that and realize that good and virtue needs to be buffeted and supported. It can so easily slip. And so it's a lesson to learn. And I think that's what a great part about reading villains is.
Yeah. And realize,
seeing yourself reflected in a villain is going, oh, I could be that villain one day too, unless I, you know, reflect and
sure
go a different path.
Yeah, but I mean, your best villains aren't just evil for evil's sake. They think they're doing the right thing. Like, I'm going to be the bravest one to step up and do the right thing that I see and no one else sees, you know? And it's like, man, no one else sees it for a reason. But I mean, they're very committed, right. You know? And they do think a lot of the times the best villains think they're doing the right thing, the best thing.
An example we would all know is Thanos, right? Very obvious.
Sure.
I think the best villains, in all honesty, not necessarily sympathetic villains, it's not absolute villains, it's villains with charisma. Mm-hmm. That's what makes a amazing villain, is just charisma. Whether they think they're right or just they know they're evil, people are drawn to that.
Homelander.
Yeah.
Presence. Screen presence. We're talking about performance there.
Yeah.
I mean, that's very hard to pick up charisma from the page.
Well, it comes through dialogue of that witty dialogue. You get that where you're going, ooh, man, he is just smooth. And thing is, I mean, that's a lot of things. I'm trying to remember it's Dune. Dune talks about it, the whole central message is to be wary of charismatic leaders. And that just because they're charismatic doesn't make them virtuous. In many cases, it can make them prone to evil. It's a lesson from the book. So, I don't know. That's certainly a life lesson to learn of. Anytime someone is really good at talking, I just look at them and go, Sauron.
So we're all training ourselves by having channels to be better talkers, that we are the villains.
That's why YouTubers eventually just
brings it back.
Go off a cliff. They get too charismatic and then evil.
I mean, because someone's loud doesn't mean they're right. You know?
Jacob says it so quietly. Yeah, just because someone's loud doesn't mean
don't be loud.
Isn't it right there in the title, though? Influencer. Doesn't that just sounds wrong right there. You know, even from the get-go.
Yeah. You're an influencer, Dad.
I'm a book influencer.
Right.
That feels a lot better. I feel comfortable influencing books. I can take that responsibility of, hey, if I say, hey, read book, some people out there will go try and read that book.
I think you
that's appropriate responsibility.
You have like a handful of people if you say, I love this book, there's like at least 5 people that go, okay, I will buy now.
Yeah.
At least
I've influenced.
To me, that feels like too much power.
Right?
To have more charisma than that.
Right?
Crazy to me.
And look at the t-shirts you have them buy. They're giving you money.
That's on his chest.
Look what you did to me, Richard.
Even better, I'm influencing people to say democracy is cringe. Look down on the system of democracy and promote that message.
I was just such a patriot until I found your channel, and now look at me.
I've actually got questions where I'm like, why would you have that on your shirt? Like, going, that's so, like, a cousin of mine was basically saying, that's so irresponsible to have that. Why would you have that on your shirt? I'm like, it's a book thing. That's irrelevant to the point that I'm also not a fan of democracy. But those are two separate things.
But this goes back to Dune, right? Wouldn't it be a great thing as a role model? I hope I instilled in my kid, question everything, particularly authority. And if you're ever lucky enough to be put into a position of leadership, never stop questioning yourself. You should always question authority at every level. And isn't it the most patriotic thing to question your own system of government? That going all the way back to the forefathers, we should continue to question, continue to look under every rock, continue to figure out what's right, what's wrong, because we have the power of hopefully bringing about change if we do find something wrong.
Is there something to over-questioning? Because I know as a father, at some point, you were telling Jacob something to do. It was the right thing. It's just like, hey, go mow the lawn, Jacob. And Jacob goes, why? And just keeps questioning you over and over and over.
Play Socrates.
To eventually go like, shut up, Jacob. Do what I say. Is there such thing as questioning authority too much? That like you over critique to the point of,
you've taken, like, can you imagine someone going into deeper critique and you critique Aragorn into the villain? Like, you just keep going around circle where you've ended up in the wrong place. You question
too
much.
You just annoy him to the point that he becomes a villain? Is that?
Well, it's the idea of over critiquing of where you if you're constantly pinholing everything to the point like now you have nothing left.
I think this is reflecting religious struggle too. And just going, do you just take a leap of faith and believe, or hypercriticism, atheist, or in between, like whatever, you know, some people, you can have different kind of philosophies on how much to question. And that can go, John, what is your answer to that as well for how much you should question authority to just listen sometimes? Is there a balance?
I mean, look, if you're questioning, you have to listen to the answer. And then it becomes a personal spiritual question of what seems right to me. When can I stop questioning? I mean, when does something strike me as true, or something that I just will believe is true, even if there's not hard knowledge or hard facts, and I'm just going to take it on faith because for me there's the ring of truth to it. So if you're questioning, you have to listen like that. You know, I don't know. As a father, like, I can't ever remember a time when I looked at my kid and said, because I said so. I don't think I've ever said that.
No, Jacob? I was not a rebellious kid. I was a rule follower. I was pretty subservient. But
By the way, Jacob, you got two more thumbnails to do after this. So chop, chop.
No problem. I'll get on that, boss.
Get ready to stay up late.
So sorry. I'll get on that right away. I mean, I don't know that... I agree with you. I think you can only say why too much to somebody if you're not listening to what the answer is. Because then it would just get to a point where you're asking because you're not interested in the answer. And then it defeats the purpose. I do think that you can ask too much when it's reflected on yourself. Like you were talking about earlier, Dad, if you have reached a point of authority and then you're questioning yourself continuously, there has to be a balance of charisma where you can continue doing what you need to do without bringing yourself down by asking yourself too many questions.
Well, I think that's the folly of it. I think it's the unseen folly of being critical. Is ultimately, if you are being critical, you are asking questions and ultimately putting your own mind above everyone else's. And I think, like, you start flipping on its head. Why do you value your own opinion so much? And so that's kind of where I've come, like, questioning authority, yes. And then ultimately you question the greater authority in my own head, myself. Why should I put stock in my own belief on X subject? Like, I know I'm ignorant on many things. Why should I? Am I so arrogant to believe, like, I am smarter than St. Thomas Aquinas? They're like, I'm questioning him. I'm going like, oh, yeah, no, this. It's like, do I really think I'm smarter than him? Do I really think I have more authority? Like, there's something about it.
You should think about that next time we have a debate over books. You should really question yourself more.
Yeah, we should ask the question, who's read more? Who is more authoritative on the subject?
You got to dive deeper, though. If I've read more, maybe I have this too omniscient perspective. Sometimes you need to be in the first person, Pav. Sometimes, okay?
I don't know. But what are your guys' thoughts on that idea of you critique everyone, that ultimately you forget to critique yourself on why you value your own opinion so highly?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're
always... I don't
think
I ever value my own opinion.
Yeah, exactly. I think we're always completely hardest on ourselves, right? Like, it's never good enough. Like, if I could have that back, just one... if I could have one more shot of that. You know, these are things that just... I question myself constantly. And when I'm in a position of leadership, it's such a fine line to walk. It's like questioning yourself, but not immobilizing yourself. And I think a lot of the times I see young people almost like kind of immobilized. They get into this self-questioning and self-doubt, and it becomes a dark spiral, and they become immobilized. And when we were young, I didn't see that as much. I mean, we were just like, hell, I know what's best. I mean, you know, we didn't question anything. Hardly, you know, and it's like now there's no video proof of it. Thank the Lord. Like, I can't imagine being young now, right. You know. Right. So I don't know, man. It's a tough, tough time. But I think we question ourselves constantly. I think we're all our worst enemies in that way.
Maybe our line just as humans, we're very much pattern recognition animals. We live in our environment. The reason we don't question whether when we put our foot on the gas that it's going to go unless it's on empty is the continued reliance at doing that result. It does it 100 out of 100 times, so of course it's going to drive when I put my foot on that. I can't create an engine, but I know I click button, it does that. And maybe our role models, and when we're questioning authority, we stop questioning people and loved ones once they've gained enough respect that producing the results, like my mother, my father, they love you enough that you stop questioning some things because you know they mean best for you. You know their heart. So maybe the authority question comes with, maybe we question government more because I don't know those people. Who are they? You know, we
can
start
also
to question,
see the results.
We can also see the results.
I've seen what they said and what they do, and things don't always match up.
And then when it comes to a faith as well, if you believe in God and that continues to bring you all these amazing things, and of course I'm going to keep believing. And then talking about role models, different faiths, one of the biggest, Jesus as a role model. I mean, what would Jesus do as a core tenet of Christianity? So we get religious, philosophical, everything in here. Sorry if you guys are coming into something random.
What character
is
this?
Jesus is in a book. It counts.
It counts.
And if you don't believe in Christ, then it's a fictional character. Title of the video.
Boom.
It's all
comes
you.
Together.
And if you do believe in Christ, then it's fictional or nonfiction. Like, which one's better? It fits.
In a way, is Jesus self-help or fiction? Like, self-help would be, it's like, you know, is it self-help because it's nonfiction and like this is not the reduced religion that help. So
is there a self-help Jesus t-shirt coming?
Oh, that'd be good.
Write that down.
Yeah, trademark.
So sorry to ramble off, but any thoughts or comments on that whole thing about authority, and just to cap this off, then we can stop rambling that portion.
I mean, I think regardless of faith or whichever topic, there's something that is, I don't know, I'm 24, maybe don't listen to me. I think there's something probably good about assuming that you could be the dumbest person in the room, and that's okay. Yeah. Be humble, learn things, be the dumbest person in the room, but don't assume that that means you shouldn't be there. There maybe needs to be a line.
Great advice.
Yeah. Wow. Very Socratic, son. Way to go. Way to bring it back to Socrates.
Thanks, Dad.
I think the best part about that is when it comes to before the decision is made, to always question, but when a decision has to be made, you stick with it and acknowledge that it could be wrong. I think a lot of people get afraid because they are afraid to make the wrong decision, that ultimately you have to be a little comfortable with, like, I'm making a decision, it could be wrong, and accepting that. And I think it makes making harder decisions a little easier, and knowing that, hey, I've just made this one decision. If it's wrong, I can make another decision later. Maybe that helps someone who gets anxiety over making decisions. Ultimately, very rarely does your individual decision affect everything out in your life. That you ultimately, there are places to turn it around.
Yeah. You can always make another decision. I mean, some are huge and it's harder to turn the boat around. It takes a while to turn that boat around. Right. But I mean, yeah, you can still turn it around. I kind of like the point I think Austin was making there. It's like, I mean, you know, right? Like, if it's your folks or your friends or your grandparents, or like, you know who's close to you and you know what they want for you. So I'm not saying don't question that authority, but you know in your heart what they want. They want the absolute best for you. Like, they would walk into traffic for you, right? Like, without a doubt. So I think when you go to get some advice or some knowledge put on you, what's closest around you kind of gets it's like that foot on the accelerator. I know it's going to go. I know it's going to be pure. I know they're going to want what's best for me. they might not have the exact right answer, but it's an echo chamber that I know is pure because they want the best for me. And I think just like in the ripples of a pond, when you drop that stone, as you start moving further and further out, you know, then I think you would have to question more and more as you move further and further away from that. But I think as humans, that's kind of how we move anyway, right? I mean, I kind of feel that way about myself. And then, I mean, maybe all the way out is I mean, I don't know if it's all the way. You'd think all the way out is like, oh, these characters from literature that I kind of love, that I kind of want to grow and learn from. But you know what? That could be very close. That could be the very closest concentric circle, because you're self-actualizing those characters in your own head. You're taking those on. You come to a piece of art with all of your baggage and all of your history and your very soul, and you open yourself up to it and you take that in, and it hits you only the way it's going to hit you. It's not going to hit anyone else on the planet the same way. So actually, these characters that you're thinking, oh, this inspires me, I want to be like this, I want to take some of the philosophy and move on, this is just as close to you. These characters are just as close to you as your family that want the absolute best for you, because it's your own mind's interpretation of that art. So I would think it's completely inner and pure.
Now, this actually gets me, all we've talked about with role models and social media and the dangers about it, there does seem to be a good measure of, is the role model a good one? Is, do they practice? Like, are they getting the result that you're looking for? Like, someone who says to do one thing, is if they're doing it themselves and ultimately getting a good result, like, that's someone to look to. That's someone to trust and believe, is they are doing what they say, and that's great. And it's the advantage of a real-life role model, the test. If someone says do one thing and you think you're a role model, you see them on social media, then you comes out later, actually they've been doing these terrible, awful things. They haven't been doing what they've said. Not a good role model. Now, maybe this is the danger of fictional role models, is because it's at the author's whim. You can write scenarios for a character that, yeah, they write a character that will say these things and this is the message, and ultimately everything works out in the end because it's a fictional story. But ultimately, put into practice in the real world, it wouldn't work. It's a bad message, a bad role model. What are your kind of thoughts on that?
I think if you pick the right, let's go back to the start and say, we can just talk about Dalinar this whole time.
Yeah.
Always loop it back to Dalinar.
I was trying to be inclusive to Jacob. I told him before this, like, don't worry, we won't get specific into books. And here we go.
Oh, man, my microphone is totally fine.
Okay.
But it's like things go horribly wrong for that dude. Like, they did not write steps for A to B to C to where things to work out. Like, he goes through an arduous, horrible journey, going all the way back to story to the Greeks. Or if you want to take some of these the figures from religion of Siddhartha or Jesus, you know, things don't work out so great for a good while, you know. And what you bring from that is their grace and them overcoming. Dalinar, again, it's like, I will, everything's Star Trek for me. So it's like, it's that amazing Star Trek moment where it's like, it's the worst Star Trek
Nick,
film.
Nick, mute that. So there's no spoiler. Sorry. But Nick, just to our editor.
Look, this is a fact. This is a fact, Austin. Yeah, Dalinar's best moment is Kirk's worst moment in his worst movie. Yes. That's just a fact.
Yes.
I don't know Star Trek very well. I'm sorry.
John, I know exactly what you're doing. You're avoiding the spoiler by saying another thing. I get it.
Correct. Yeah.
And Star Trek is goated. In terms of moral philosophy, watch Star Trek. It is just fascinating. Some of the best really TV is. Writing, period.
So, but things don't go well for him, and they always, I will get up, I will try and be a stronger man, I will keep going forward, I will self-actualize, I will learn, I will overcome through self and grace, I will keep marching forward. I mean, these are the things that you bring forward, and it's like the author didn't make it an easy path for them, right? So these are some of the best things that you could take from some of these characters, from philosophies and religion and story.
you can only know so many people. I like your point of you're mixing that in with, hey, you could have closer fictional characters than you do family, because some family could be estranged. You could have a cousin that you love, but a cousin that things get so estranged, you don't trust them. They're not a good person. Some people don't have that. So with these fictional characters we're surrounding ourselves with, it just gives us more opportunity to meet good people and bad people. So what if we cannot meet an infinite number of people, but we could read so many stories. So it just brings us outside. And also, I think what stories do, what a message does for a story, what a character can do, is give a great example of the extremes. Because you can't, you can look into history and we could find figures who went through different times than we did. Even look at your generation, John, to even prior generations, toward different wars, different environments, different that each generation has uniquely different struggles. There's also patterns and rhythm in history, but uniquely different in the way stories are patterns and rhythm in history, yet those stories show a new perspective in a new time, a new environment. So all this is doing for me, for when I just love these characters, something hits a core human element in some sort of perspective that I could just never get before. And talking story, Jacob, John, your thing is all about stories. I think it's why we love it. One portion of the infinite amount of love we have for stories. And Jacob, because I feel so bad that we were talking specific about Stormlight and other things, I wanted to ask you, and then I'll go right to John here, of the Peregrine. I know John and I gave Dalinar's example, but I didn't hear from Jacob or you, Rich, of who your biggest fictional role model would be. If you had to be like, this is my person, and don't say that movie that you said earlier, because I know it's a bad influence now. Okay, so we just, you guys listening right now, we just cut out StreamYard didn't work for us, where we're back in the episode. So Jacob and Rich had a couple extra minutes to think about their answer. So Jacob, since you had so long to think about your role model, other than not a real role model,
you
but
say so long, you were gone for like 1 minute.
No, 3 or 4 minutes. It was a very long time.
You should have a really good answer.
What is it,
I was
Jacob?
Saying, I don't think that I watch a lot of things where I'm like, oh man, I gotta be like this person. Like, I know I've heard you say, Austin, like, I am Darrow. Darrow is me. I do not feel that way at all. But I watch a lot of things and feel like, oh, I should be exactly the opposite of this person. Like, I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is, if no one has watched this, is an amazing movie called Memories of Murder. That is just about these detectives that are completely inept and in their own heads and unable to solve the case because they're incapable. They're just entirely too selfish and won't listen to anybody else. So, I mean, that's where I draw a lot of my stuff from, on how to not suck. And I guess maybe a better answer would be like, I haven't read the book yet. I'd really want to. But the HBO series for Station 11, I really gravitated toward Jeevan. Just like the person
your
that
approves
is reluctant. Man, Jeevan rocks. It reluctant, but thrust into that role where they have to take care of somebody and they're able to set themselves aside for just long enough to get the job done and somehow communicate to that person that, hey, I'm doing my best, you know?
It seems like the pattern with you and your dad there, that character trait you're really getting onto is tenacity, some sort of perseverance and that human spirit.
Yeah, absolutely. Is that how you feel about Dalinar, Dad?
I mean, yeah. I mean, you knock that man down 1,000 times and he's still going to get up and try and do the best for his family and the world around him, right? And he's going to question everything about himself, all the decisions he's made, so he can self-actualize and be better in the future. But it's like, have you read all 6 of Red Rising, Austin?
Yeah. Yeah. Don't spoil, but yeah, I have.
That's the series he actually has finished.
Okay. I love it. I love the second 3 better than the first. It's just,
I was Darrow in Red Rising because of his flaws. See, that's what made me Darrow. It's just,
oh, I love it. And I love, look, blew my mind because it was like, what an amazing journey that turns to the spiritual. And you get like this, this warrior at the end. It's like the end of Macbeth looking back over the mistakes he's made, and only by owning his mistakes can I become the man I need to be to go forward. I love the second three better than the first three.
Well, Nick, mute some of that, maybe. Yeah, there you go. we'll have some...
spoiler warning?
Yeah, spoiler warning or something on there.
Well,
yeah.
Sorry, okay. Nick. Yeah. Nick's going to actually have to edit this time. He's going to...
Poor Nick.
But Rich, you would agree, Darrow's your favorite character, but besides Darrow...
Besides Darrow.
Of all time. Of all time, Richard. Oh, of all time.
My earliest role model. Fictional role model was Ender Wiggin from Ender's Game.
That's a good choice.
What I especially admired about Ender was not just, like, of course, there's the standard stuff about perseverance, but it was his decision-making and being able to think multiple steps ahead and to analyze himself. There was also conviction when he made a decision of, I'm going to make a decision, I'm going to move forward. At no hesitation on step. Like, he can hesitate in the moments, and like we were talking about, hesitate on when it's not time for a decision, he questions. But when it's time for a decision, when it's time for action, he trusts himself and he goes forward. And I thought it was really – I still remember the I know maybe this would make me weird, but I remember so vividly the scene of Ender getting bullied in the beginning of the book. Like, this is the first, like, two chapters, something like that. And he's being bullied, and he figures out a way, and he is able to get the main bully and beat him up and stop him. And then he thinks to himself and realizes that if I just stop here, they're going to beat me up tomorrow, and I won't have another trick. I won't be able to trick them again this time. They'll just come at me with numbers. And so he just starts punching me in front of him. I'm going to scare everyone else around here, and so that they'll never attack me again. And sure, maybe that's psychopathic, but I liked the thought process on his decision making was just in the heat of a moment. He thought about the future and what are the ramifications of my actions and how can I win the future battles now? And I remember that moment vividly. I don't know, does that make me weird?
I knew this about you already, so I've accepted it years ago. It's up to them.
Like, doesn't that wisdom kind of breaks down to the same as if you ever find yourself on the inside, you find the biggest, meanest guy and beat the snot out of him.
It basically is, yeah. But I liked how much of it was, like, that kind of mentality is like, hey, look, one, you just have to be the strongest. Ender went the more psychotic route, and also knowing that he's not strong, he got it. He has a unique moment of he got one over on this guy, and
yeah,
it's not going to happen again. He tricked him. It's like, I got to make it count.
Yeah. I think Ender's a great choice. I loved that book when I first read it.
It definitely.
I remember reading that. I read that really young, and I think that ties into something you guys were saying earlier. Like, I remember I came from a house where my dad left. I was pretty early, and I was always looking to fill that role, right? I was always looking to fill that hole, teachers, coaches, you know, and oftentimes characters in books. And the characters in books were constant. Like, you could go back and read your favorites, like Aragorn. Aragorn's going to be Aragorn every time, and he's going to hit you the same way and stand for those things and be the same every time. Humans might let you down here or there, you know? So when I was young and looking to fill those roles, I mean, it was a lot of characters. I was that TV kid. I was that bookish kid. And it was a lot of characters that I tried to fill those roles with.
Do you remember one specifically when you were younger?
Oh, man. It's weird. But the first one that pops to mind is Aslan from Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe.
Oh, wow.
That's not the pick I was expecting.
Huh. Yeah.
Also, not a bad pick to pick Jesus.
Just the soothing grace, the calm under pressure. I read those things over and over again, and there was just I would read it out loud and do the voices. And you know, there was just something about that character that I definitely, in moments of turmoil in my younger times, I was really drawn to it.
If we could say then, from these role models that you're all picking out, what are the virtues and qualities when we're saying as a good role model that it comes really down to? I know it's very different character to character, but what encapsulates that their theme, their character arc? Did I keep it when I said tenacity for you two? Is there something else? Is there something that just goes, wow, that is something that I like to see out of somebody that I can aspire to be, that I would want my kids to aspire to be?
I mean, for me, I would say with Jeevan in Station 11, my big thing that I love is I love seeing somebody that is so quick to put other people above themselves.
Nice. Yeah.
Anybody that, I mean, not only just in the apocalypse, for those that haven't read Station 11, that's not a spoiler, I swear. but to be in any circumstance where there's a job to be done, no one else is here to do it, I guess it's me. Okay, here we go. I don't think I'm going to do the best, but I'm going to do it because these people need it. I aspire to be that.
Wow. That's spot on, John. You agree with that?
That's my boy. That makes me very happy. I got to say, that makes me enormously happy to hear that. I was going to say, you know, I think what draws me is like that tenacity, the keep getting up over and over again, and then tempered with compassion, kindness, understanding. I mean, I always heard, like, when, you know, I heard from my dad and other, you know, men that would block out the sun when I was a little kid growing up. He's a good man. Be a good man. Grow up and be a good man. Here, meet my friend. He's a good man. And I never understood, what are the ingredients? What makes a good man? Oh. When I was a little kid, I was constantly, it's like, what? I mean, the biggest wisdom my dad would always tell me over and over about myself was, oh, you're a good boy, son, but you crap too close to camp and track it back. For years, I couldn't figure out what that meant. Like, what are you trying to say? What does that mean? What does it mean to be a good man? And so when I was raising Jacob, it's like, what it means to be a good man, I think, is you always stand up for what you believe, and you stand up for those that can't stand up for themselves, always. I think that's what makes a good man. So I always tried to put something to it, you know? So I think it's that tenacity, it's that getting up, and it's tempered with compassion and kindness. I think that's would be what I always look for.
John and Jacob from Talking Story. Not the last time we'll speak. Jacob, we'll be hounding your ass for this thumbnail quick because this video is awesome, okay? We want to get this out immediately. And Rich, you too. Thank you for joining us for this conversation.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate you inviting me back on.
Of course.
John, I wait for that invitation every week.
if you guys would like to close, obviously check out Talking Story immediately. Their link will be in the description below. But I'll let you guys sign off with anything you want to say to the audience.
Oh, man. This is a much bigger audience than we're used to. So I just feel incredibly lucky to have, one, met Austin and Rich because they're fun to be around, and hopefully we get to hang out with them in Dragonsteel.
Definitely.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks anyone that did tune in. If you check out Talking Story, you'll be hearing my dad talk a lot more than I will, but that's okay because he reads a lot more than I does. So
it just shows he reads a lot more than I does.
Oh, man. See, I would say I'm tired and I should go to bed, but it's only
if Rich did that, I would have pointed it out, but I felt like I couldn't to Jacob. I felt bad. You know, I'm so okay. Glad his dad was here to teach him
right under the bus, Austin.
That was immediately I read more than you do because you wouldn't have, you know, said that if you read more.
Because he does.
What I keep telling you. Yeah. I told you guys before we started, man, I did not have a great day. Everyone that got, you know, tweaked me a little bit to out of center, I would just look at them and go, you know what? I get to talk to Austin and Rich tonight. You guys go home and pound sand. I don't care. I'm flying high. Let the pigeons loose. This is a great day. I love you guys. I love meeting you. It's changed my life. BookTube has been amazing because I've got to meet people like you to hang out and talk about books and important stuff with, man. And it has just made me beyond happier than I was before I met you. And I just can't thank you enough for inviting us on.
That's such high praise. John, the same here. really appreciate talking. It's such a fun one. I love just
everything started from us of just envy. We looked at your channel, was just instantly envious of how good it looked. We're so impressed. And then hearing you talk like, ah, darn it, they're off to a much better start than us. They're going to catch up so
quick.
That's
not true at all.
You guys are amazing. Like, look at, like, we immediately saw your new shelves and it's like, we got to get more shelves.
You understand. You guys were a significant part of, like, additional, like, oh, we need to upgrade our shelves. Talkie Store, they came out of the gate strong. Like, oh, got it.
We came out in front of a green screen in the break room at work, man.
Actually, like, no, we came out in front of a blank white wall. If you go back to the first video, it looks like you're in some kind of void.
It looks like I'm institutionalized. It really does. It looks like I had a day pass.
I remember when we got the set, we were like, oh, this is great. And then Austin and Rich came on. They were like, oh, we need to up our set. And then they did this. And I was like, well, we can't compete with that.
Yeah.
What are we going to do now?
We can't compete with Austin and Rich anyway. I mean, they're panelists. Are you kidding me?
As of now, you know.
As of now.
We're going to revoke it after this.
We still don't know if it's 1 to 3. We don't know as of this recording if it's 1, 2, or 3 panels. I hope it's 3. Let's just do them all.
Yeah.
That'll be awesome.
I hope for 3, 2. I just can't believe I'm going to be there and get to watch you guys on a panel. It's going to be awesome.
We're going to hang out. It's going to be fun. Great. John, we're actually going to have that cigar together as well.
You bet we are.
A long time ago, we promised.
Mm. We promised. Mm. And you guys could probably meet the man now. You're on a panel. But, Jacob and I are,
please.
We're Jacob and I are still going to have to, like, maybe rent a van and wait around the corner and,
Well, don't tell the plan out loud. Hang on to that.
It doesn't sound as good when we say it out loud.
No.
It looked really good on paper. I had it all
stitched out.
We got
drawings and notes.
Yeah, we have the whole thing.
Well, John, Jacob, we love your channel, love you as people. Can't wait to meet you in person. We feel like we're going to go from pen pals online to actually, like, wow, you're real. You're not fictionalized characters that I'm aspiring to be. Now you're real people. And as Jacob would sign us off, this does be a good podcast. We'll see you next week.
That teeters my totter.
Question for you. Would you rather pay $150 a month or $15 a month to work out with the same high-quality gym equipment? At Planet Fitness, you can get top-tier equipment for $15 a month. Plus, save $28 or more when you join now during our Strong Choice Sale. Our weights weigh the same, you just don't pay the same. Enjoy free fitness training and 24-hour access at most clubs, all in the judgment-free zone. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month, cancel anytime. Deal ends October 10th. See club for details.